Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos is Yud Gimel. We're a little bit behind. We're on Yud Beis Amud Beis. We're starting today on the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis with Saras Alanei Samer Rav Asi. Rav Asi is found about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud, and we are continuing. We are discussing somewhat of odd co-wives, okay, which in of itself could describe any situation in which you have more than one wife, but nevertheless, we're going to be discussing, and as we have been discussing, a number of women who are co-wives, which may end up exempting the other co-wife for the mitzvah of Yibum. Again, just to reset, because this is a difficult first sugya of the Gemara, which lasted almost 2 weeks, and that is, and the first Mishnah, what we learned together, is that in the event that you are, that the man dies and he leaves two wives, and one of them is an erva, so she's an erva to the Yavam, so she's going to be exempting not only herself from the mitzvah of Yibum, but also the co-wife as well. That has been the operating principle since the beginning of the Masechta, but the operating principle is only operational when we're talking about a bona fide erva, meaning the women that are listed in the 18th parak of Vayikra. Right, notable exception to Nida, by the way, a point which I don't think I mentioned once in this entire two week opening of the Masechta. Tosfos discusses it on day one. On Dav Beis, Amud Aleph, Tosfos discusses what about Nida. We all know the conclusion, but it definitely requires more of an explanation in terms of why Nida, on one hand, is an erva, but on the other hand, is not an erva. Okay, but obviously not our topic for today. But nevertheless, we are including other women as well. Which women are we including? So if you remember in yesterday's daf, let's go 2 days ago. Let's go back to Yud Aleph. So on daf Yud Aleph, we discussed Tzaras Sota, the co-wife of a Sota. On yesterday's daf, we talked about Tzaras Mamenes. And we are going back to yesterday's daf because we fell a little bit behind, and we're going to be discussing now Tzaras Ilanis. Okay, so, and just as at the end of the entire sugya, which is coming up on the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, so we're going to conclude on all these halachas. So that's good. A lot of discussion yesterday, but no conclusions. Conclusions to be coming up. Amar Avasi. So, picking up where we left off yesterday, Tzaras Ilanis Asura. So, the co-wife of an Ilanis. Now, what's an Ilanis? An Ilanis is a woman who's incapable of having children. Did the husband know this when he married her? So that's an important question, and one in which we're going to be addressing in just a moment. But the halacha is that regarding an Ilanis, is that the marriage, if he knows about it, certainly he's allowed to marry such a woman. There is a mitzvah period of Verivia. Marrying such a woman would not help him in terms of the mitzvah peruvu, but he certainly, if he opts in, he's certainly allowed to marry such a woman. What's notable about the Ilanis, by the way, the term Ilanis comes from the word aisle. Aisle's a ram, which is a male, which is a male sheep. So over here in this regard, because there is something biologically, so to say, wrong with her in that she cannot have children. So that's where the term Ilanis comes from. As far as Yibum is concerned, Ilanis becomes an interesting factor because, for an Ilanis, there's no mitzvah of Yibum. Because what is the whole purpose of the mitzvah of Yibum? The whole purpose is to perpetuate the name of the brother. Well, if she's incapable of having children, so there is no perpetuity. She simply cannot have children. Therefore, there is no mitzvah of Yibum. So far, so good. That was already a lot of information that was just dropped. Right now, we're talking about the co-wife of an Ilanis. So Tzaras Ilanis Asura. So according to Rav Asi, she's going to be prohibited. How did he arrive at that conclusion? We're not talking about the Ilanis herself. We're talking about the co-wife of the Ilanis. Sheshenemar v'yabachor she'telaid. Prior Ilanis she'ne yoledis. So b'chor she'telaid. Again, to go back to the point that I just made moments earlier, the whole purpose of Yibum is to perpetuate. She can't perpetuate. So Prat Lailan is Shein HaYoledes. She's going to be exempt from the mitzvah. And therefore what? So here's now the tricky part. It's not so tricky, but it's a little bit tricky. And that is as follows. So now, how do we regard her? So we regard her as a widow. She was a widow. She was married to him. We regard her as a widow, but without the mitzvah of Yibum. What's a widow without the mitzvah of Yibum? So she is now Ashes Ach. She was your brother's wife, which means that she's an Erva. She's an Erva, sans the mitzvah of Yibum. So now what does that make the co-wife? The co-wife now is a co-wife of an Erva. Okay. It's an interesting Svara, and this is the one that Rav Asi is dealing with. Or not dealing with, but this is the one that he's entertaining. Meis Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes says, really? So allow me please to challenge. Shoshach and Nisun Shoshna Nachrios. It's a Mishnah coming up later in the Masechta. You have three brothers, each one of them marrying a woman. They happen not to be related. Now, one of them dies, now leaving his wife for the mitzvah of Yibum. Another brother, in other words, there are two remaining brothers. So he does what's called Mimer. Maimer, I think this is the first time in the Masechta that we're discussing Maimer. Maimer is a Kiddushin that was instituted by the Chachamim in a Yibum context. Meaning, normally when you marry a woman, there are two stages of marriage. There is Erusin, there's Nisuin. When it comes to Yibum, there's not two stages, it's one stage. One stage is Yibum. Yibum would be comparable to Nisuin, meaning the woman is now already married, you're just perpetuating the marriage, so you do what's called Yibum. It would be, if we're going to make an analogy, tantamount to the second stage of marriage. So over here, what the Chachamim did is that in Yibum, so they inserted the stage of Erusin. This is what's called Maimer. So over here, what the second man did, of the two surviving brothers, one of them did Maimer to her, Umes. And now the man died. Now keep in mind that Maimer is a rabbinic legislation. Min HaTorah, it's very simple. It's binary. Either he did Yibum or he didn't do Yibum. So over here, he did Maimer. So Min HaTorah, it means nothing. But Midrabanan, it means that now there's some connection between the widow and now the second brother. Hare Elu Chosos V'lo Misyavo. So now what you have is this woman now headed to the third brother with how many Zikas? Well, that's a funny question. The correct answer is two Zikas, but it's complicated. Because one Zika is a bona fide Zika because she really was married to the first of the brothers and Yibum has not yet been performed. On the other hand, we're going to recognize a Maimer that was done to her by the second brother, and that Maimer is analogous to, it's tantamount to, a second Zika. So here we're looking at a two Zika woman. It is strange, but the Gemara says, now, Shenemer, Omesechamehem Yavam Yavo Alehem, Mishala Zikas Yavam Echad, V'lo Zika Shnei Yavamim. And the Gemara quotes a Drasha. And the Drasha cited tells us that such a woman is not going to be eligible for Yibum, because only a woman with one Zika is eligible for Yibum, not a woman with two Zikas. Now, it's a Drasha, right? So my response is, not really. As the Gemara will say, as Rashi says, as the Gemara will say, this is an Asmachta. In other words, this is not a bona fide Drasha. It can't be. Because the Drasha is only going to be darshaning dinim that are Minatorah. Minatorah, how many Zikas does she have? One. It's only because of the legislation of Maimer does she have a second Zika. So even though we're darshaning, it's not a bona fide Drasha, it's an Asmachta. Anyway, V'ketani Allah. All this brings us to the following point. Amar Rav Yosef Zuhi at Saras Eishas Av, Achme Av, she is an Afila Garam La. So Rav Yosef makes the following comment. This is going to be a scenario in which the co-wife of Eishas Ach from your father, where the Iser Nefila Garam La, it's Yibum, or the Nefila for Yibum, which causes the Iser. Meaning you're not going to find this anywhere else. We are in unprecedented territory where, because now she has an additional Zika, so therefore, as a result of that, you can't do Yibum. Meaning, it's a real, real brain teaser. Find me another scenario where a woman, because she falls to you for Yibum, as a result of that, is now going to be precluded from Yibum. Okay? And I admit, by the way, it just takes a lot of time to process. So what I'm going to recommend you do, not here live, but as you're playing this, is pause. Think more about it and then come back. But anyway, we're going to go on. Shalom atzina b'chala Torah kula kagon zos. So you're not going to find this anywhere else. Now zuhi lamute mai. So you're not going to find this anywhere else. So the Gemara says, now what is it coming to exclude? Meaning Rav Yosef says that this is the only case. So the Gemara says, lav lamute tzara silenis, desharya. So presumably what he's coming to make reference to is the co-wife of an islandist. Meaning in the case of the co-wife of an islandist, so that's somebody that you are allowed to marry. Either was a nefila, in other words, their husband died, and now they fell to you. So when Rav Yosef says, this is the case where nefila is exclusionary, and this is the case which is unprecedented, meaning the other case would be comparable where it's Tsaras Islandis. Now again, that's a lot of work. Meaning, of all the cases out there, Tsaras Islandis is the one that's making reference to. And the Gemara immediately rejects this assumption. Lo lamute tzara salanis tasire. So the Gemara says, no, tzara salanis would be prohibited, as Rav Asi wanted to argue at the beginning of the sugya. Umayzu, he, and when Rav Yosef made the comment, zu he, this is unprecedented, zui dis nefila garam la tzarasa. I'm sorry, tzarasa by chalitza. So this is a kind of nefila where the co-wife is going to require chalitza. So island is nefila chalitza lo baye. But as far as the islandess is concerned, her co-wife is not even going to require chalitza. So my time of hadar, raisa hadar abanan. because there's a major difference. You can't compare the two cases. In the case of the co-wife of an islandess, so the islandess's exemption, her exemption from the mitzvah of Yibum, that's a din d'oraisa. She can't have children, and therefore she can't perpetuate the name. Therefore, there's no mitzvah of Yibum. Therefore, she's Eishes Ach. Therefore, the co-wife is Tzaras Erva. Okay, again, play that again. By the way, that was a great sentence, right? It just one point flowed to the next. All that operates min haTorah. So, but Mashenke, when it comes to the double Zika woman, that's not min haTorah. There is no second Zika. When the second brother did mimer to her, min haTorah, it just simply means that Yibam has not yet accomplished. And therefore, when he dies, and now she goes to the third brother, who is she coming from? Min haTorah. She's coming from the first brother, min haTorah, not the second brother. So min haTorah, she only has one Zika. Because of Mimer, so now a second Zika is introduced. Okay, but that's a din derabanan. On a din derabanan, so now we could use terminology like, okay, so we'll require chalitza, but not yibum. In other words, we'll take that middle position, because it's a din derabanan. But over here, we're talking about dini daraisa. It's binary. It's either obligated or exempt. Obligated means either yibam or chalitza. Exempt means nothing. It's a major. It's a huge difference. Tanan. The Gemara says, okay, we're gonna go back to our Mishnah. What did we learn in our Mishnah? V'kula mimeso miyano nisgarshu oshinim su'ailad saros sarosem mutaros. And any one of the 15 cases of our Mishnah, if A, B, C, or D were to occur. Now, D happens to be, and if she's an islandess, meaning the Erva's an islandess, so then, Sarasem Mutaros, so then the co-wives are going to be Mutar. Why? Because you know what islandess means? Islandess means they were not married. So Lokasha, Kansha Hikerba, Kansha Lo Hikerba, Deganami Diktani, Shinim Sivalokitani Shayush Mamina. So the Gemara says the answer that we all knew, but here's where the Gemara articulates it. It depends on whether you knew she was an Alice or you didn't know she was an Alice. If you knew she was an Alice and you accepted it, so now you're husband and wife, you're married. If you didn't know she was an Alice and she knew and she didn't tell you, so that's what's called a Mekachtos. So you married her under false impressions and under those circumstances, the marriage just simply doesn't occur. This is Mekachtos and the marriage is simply not going to be Chal. And the Tzara now is not a Tzara. She is now not a co-wife. In other words, she's the only wife. And she's therefore the mitzvah of Yibam is back in play. Okay. Amarava. Okay, so after a lengthy discussion that takes us all the way back to Yud Aleph regarding the three types of tzaras that we discussed now since Yud Aleph. Tzaras Sota, Tzaras Mamenis, Tzaras Islandis. So we just finished discussing all three of them. The Gemara arrives at Halachas. We're in the very top of Yud Beis Amud Beis. Hilchasa, Tzaras Islandis, Mutaris, Vafilu Hikerba. So as far as Tzaras Islandis is concerned, Mutaris. Now, at this point in time, we should all be a little bit confused, right? Because the Ravasi's position, Tzaras Islandis, is Asura. Okay, so the Gemara's conclusion, Rava's conclusion is no, she's Muteris. We'll come back to that in just a moment. And Ve'afilu Tzaras Bito, and even if it's Tzaras Bito, meaning it happens to be that your daughter's an islandess. Okay, so the island, Ve'afilu Tzaras Bito islandess. Ve'alahad diktani shenimtsu, tinisha hayu. Now, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, where the Mishnah says the word shenimtsu, okay, so we'll understand it. Either edit it or understand it as shahayu. And Kiyazah, Rav and Amar Rav Yochanan. Okay, well, before we get to the next Gemara. So Rav did an about face. So Rav says that regarding Tzaras Islandis now is going to be obligated in the mitzvah of Yibam, even if you knew. You knew she was an islandess, but in the event that the husband dies, leaving the islandess and the co-wife for the mitzvah of Yibam, the islandess happens to be an erva. Okay, so according to Rav, what she's going to do is she's going to be disregarded. How could she be disregarded? Meaning she's a wife. How is she disregarded? So Rashi over here quotes the following from the Halachas Gedolos. Take a look at the top Rashi on the Amud Beis, Yud Beis Amud Beis. Ve'afagav deikar ba'echa ve'kaima v'havya ishto lo mitzvah et tzarasa mishum tzaras abas. Okay. So obviously Rav is of the position that in the case of tzaras islandis, we do not view the tzara as a co-wife of an islandis. How? Rashi says, dechi asarech manat tzaras erva b'makom mitzvah. Because when do we say that tzaras erva is going to be exempt from Yibum when it's only b'makom mitzvah? And over here, we're going to be expanding the definition of makom mitzvah. What does that mean? So, he da asra, v'ha kevin da island is he da balav erva, nami lo chaz yali Yibum, have a tzarasa tzaras erva shalom b'makom mitzvah. Because the islandess is not capable of doing the mitzvah, this is not called Saras Erva B'Makom Mitzvah. Makom Mitzvah means that there has to be a mitzvah on both co-wives in order for there to create an exemption. Here, in this case, because the islandess is not able, she's not eligible to perform the mitzvah, this is not considered Saras Erva B'Makom Mitzvah, because the islandess can't do the mitzvah. So now, what are we doing with the islandess, basically? Now, she was obviously a wife. He knew she was an islandess. He married her, accepting the fact that she was an islandess. But vis-a-vis Yibum, she's taken out of the discussion altogether. And now, as far as the co-wife is concerned, the co-wife now is the only eligible party in order to do the mitzvah of Yibum. She's a co-wife of an erva. That doesn't qualify over here, because it's only the co-wife of an erva b'makom mitzvah. And over here, the erva is not a makom mitzvah. And so therefore, the only one that is even on the discussion for the mitzvah of Yibum is only going to be the co-wife. Okay, so Rav is of the position that under those circumstances, the co-wife is in fact going to do the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay.
So the same thing if she was a
soiter,
let's say.
It's not. It will be, but not for the same reason. Ki asa Rav and Amar Rav Yochanan achatz aras mamenes. So now Rav Yochanan is quoted over the following, meaning we're going to now say halachas for all three of the women that we've been discussing the last couple of days. Tzaras mamenes, v'achatz aras islandess, v'achatz aras machzik rishoso, kula mutaros. Okay. Now, the Gemara is doing an about-face on every one of the topics. Well, it just happens to be that we already know that Rava did an about-face on Tzaras Islandess, so that doesn't come as a surprise, but there are two surprises over here. Tzaras Mamenes, Tzaras Sota are both going to be mutter. Tzaras Mamenes, in other words, remember, this goes to the case where she does mion to the Yavam. Now, that was complicated, and that was a little bit confusing, but that's what we learned in yesterday's daf. If she did mion to her husband, so then that annuls the marriage, and now she's just simply no longer in the discussion. But if she does mean to her Yavam, so under those circumstances, as a Gzera Drabanan, even though, this is what we learned in yesterday's daf, and I admit that this is confusing, even though the mean to the Yavam annuls her marriage, not just her Zika, but her marriage from her original husband, but nevertheless as a Gzera Drabanan, which actually we're going to revisit again in today's daf. So the Chachamim were gozer that she cannot, she's viewed as a wife, even though she annulled the marriage. Meanwhile, according to Rav Yochanan, the Tzaras Mamenes would be mutter. The co-wife of the Mamenes would be mutter, meaning he disagrees with what we said yesterday. And also Tzaras Sota as well. Tzaras Sota, I'm insisting that we're talking about Saras Sota and we're not. We're talking about Saras Machzik Rishoso. That's also another one that we discussed. Sorry. Saras Sota, we discussed and we concluded. Sorry. Saras Machzik Rishoso, which was a major, major discussion starting on Yud Aleph Amud Beis, going all the way to the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. So over there, once again, we're saying that that the co-wife of a Machzik Rishoso also is going to be Matur as well. Okay, Adkan. Takes us to the end of the discussion of the co-wives of not Arayos, but Arayos equivalents, if you will. And after a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, the Gemara now has just concluded, and yes, the conclusion is confusing because the conclusion does an about-face on almost every one of the topics that we've been discussing regarding what is the halakha conclusion. Okay, we continue in the Gemara when Yud Beis Amud Beis, still a little bit in catch-up mode, and we're going to be learning a brisa. This brisa comes up a number of times throughout Shas, and that is the use of contraception. Okay, use of contraception, we're going to be dealing with from the perspective of the Gemara. And yes, in other words, they had contraception, and under certain circumstances, it was in fact allowed to be used. There are a lot of details over here that need to be discussed, but I'm not going to be discussing it right now, as this is not a discussion in halacha. I'm just dealing with it from the Gemara, because the Gemara has one specific point that it wants to bring up. And so regarding any questions regarding contraception, so I will table any question on the front end. And you can ask local rabbinic authorities in terms of any questions you might have. So three women are allowed or permitted. This is Rashi's explanation. I'm going to go with Rashi. Three women are allowed to use contraception. So Ketana Mu'ubaris Menika. So they are. We're going to go through each three of them. So Ketana Shematis Abba V'Shematamos. Because a Ketana is married. So she right now is not physically able to withstand a pregnancy. So therefore, so contraception is used until she arrives at age. Age over here would probably means 12 years of age, at which point in time then she no longer uses contraception so that she can get pregnant, she can have a child. Really interesting over here, the second woman is a woman who is pregnant. Now, a woman is pregnant normally does not need to be concerned about getting pregnant again, but if she does, it will be a threat to her current fetus that she's carrying. So as a result of that, she uses contraception. Now, a woman who is nursing, again, a woman who, generally speaking, doesn't get pregnant, but if she does, so it will be very difficult consequences to the child she's currently nursing. Because if she becomes pregnant, obviously that's going to reduce her lactating, and the child right now who's in desperate need of nutrition is not going to receive the necessary nutrition. So under these circumstances, these women could use contraception. So the AZ Katana, now the Brisa goes on, just in terms of giving us better definitions. A katana mi bas yud alf shana v'yomecha ad yud beishana from 11 to 12. V'yomechan pachos mikam v'yasa kam mishameshes kedarka v'olechas divrei Rabbi Meir. Anything younger or older, so then she's just simply going to be with her husband without the benefit of contraception because she doesn't need it. Anything younger, she's not going to get pregnant. Anything older, she'll be able to successfully have the baby. V'chacham emor mimachazu v'achazu mishameshes kedarka v'olechazu mineshamayim yirachmu mishum shenem r'shomer pesayim Hashem. As far as the chachamim are concerned, so the Chachamim say no. In other words, in all these circumstances, she's going to be with her husband without the use of contraception. And as far as the risk is concerned, you're allowed to take this risk. You're allowed to take risks. Yeah, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over fools. Okay, this is an extraordinarily important and big topic. And there's no way that we're going to be doing this any kind of justice in the Daf Yomi in terms of understanding what risk is tolerable and what risk is not tolerable. Meaning, Shomer Pesayim Hashem does not allow someone to act foolishly. In other words, there's a certain amount of allowable risk that one is allowed to take. And as far as the Chachamim is concerned, the chances of any one of these women getting pregnant and serving as a risk either to her, the fetus, or the child that she just had, according to the Chachamim, does not reach the threshold in which it's a risk that you really need to be concerned about. And over here, you can operate you could take risk. You could take this kind of risk. Okay, anyway. So, all this, by the way, just to make one particular point, meaning there are, in this brisa, so many topics to discuss, but we're just simply not going to. Meaning, we're just going to be focused on the one particular topic that the Gemara wants to focus on. Now, okay, is it possible for an 11-year-old to have a child? It's possible, meaning that's the sense that you get from the Brisa, because the Brisa says she may get pregnant and then she may die, which means that there's a possibility that she may get pregnant, but there also exists a possibility that she won't die. Now, im kein, masina chamaso mem enes. If that's true, so then our Mishnah is wrong, because our Mishnah made a really flat comment that, you know, your mother-in-law can't do mian. What we are here to suggest right now for a moment is that the mother-in-law could do mian. Okay. I hope everyone appreciates and understands right now how bizarre a comment that is, that the mother-in-law can do mian. Mian can only be done up until 12 years of age. After 12 years of age, when she then is with her husband after 12, she's now a fully married woman. Okay. So mian can only be done up until 12. And at the same time, she's also can qualify as a mother-in-law. Okay. Everyone understand? That's really difficult. But it's possible. Difficult, but possible. Now, the problem with our Mishnah is the Mishnah says it's impossible. But now we just learned together, it is within the realm of possibility. Now, mind you, by the way, I'm going to try to articulate how it's possible, right? It's really strange. Meaning, what happened was that at 11 years of age, she got married, she got pregnant, and she had a baby before 12. Okay, 9 months later. Good. So now she has a child. And in order for her to be a mother-in-law, that means the child has to be married. Okay, so the child now was married off by her father, if there's no father, a brother, a mother. So now we're talking about an infant over here. And I understand how strange all this is. It's strange. Okay. So, but the point right now for us is concerned, we're going to put aside all the unusual nature of these kinds of events. It's just that the Gemara is challenging the very flat statement of our Mishnah, you know, it's impossible. And the Gemara now is now noting that with the Brisa in hand, at least it's within the realm of possibility. Highly unlikely, but at least it's possible. So the Gemara says, and so that goes against our Mishnah. So the Gemara is going to give a number of suggestions in terms of how to resolve this. So Ema Shematis Aber Vitama. So one possibility is we misunderstood the Braisa. When the Braisa says maybe she'll get pregnant, it's not maybe she'll get pregnant and maybe she'll die. Maybe she'll get pregnant, and if she does, then for sure she's going to die. That's one way to say over the Braisa. In fact, this goes right in line with the statement of Rabba Bar Levi, which is that before 11 years of age, so just simply, she's not going to get pregnant. Anywhere from 11 to 12, probably not going to get pregnant. But if she does, it is basically terminal for both her and the fetus. And after 12 years of age, so she can successfully have a pregnancy. So, good. So that's one way to say over the Braisa. Now that we said it that way, no longer do we have a question. So, Shekvar Yaladu means that because they already gave birth. And as Rashi points out over here, it says they already gave birth, so it would indicate that they were a katana. If in fact they were not a katana, how should the Braisa have ended? The Braisa should have ended with the word Shekvar Gadlu. But it doesn't say that. It says Shekvar Yaladu. Okay, so from the Diak, it certainly sounds like that it's within the realm of possibility for a minor to be able to give birth. So Elal Olam Shemetis Aber V'Shematamu. So the Gemara says, okay. So we're going to go back to what we originally presented, and that is that it's possible. It's possible for a minor, a girl of anywhere between the age of 11 and 12 to get pregnant and to successfully deliver. It's possible. Okay, now, Ve'ela Kashahach. So the Gemara says, okay, if it's possible, so we're back to our difficulty. Because remember, what did we say in the Braisa? In the Braisa it said that it's impossible for your mother-in-law to do Mian because a mother-in-law can't do Mian. Now, as long as we're back in the realm of possibility, so aren't we stuck? So Amar Rav Safra, Banim Harim Kisimanim. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. Well, we're stuck, but we're gonna turn this into a new rule. New rule. When do we say that a woman graduates, matriculates from being a Ketana to being a Gedola? So here's what we say all the time, the Gemara Nida, and this is the supposition of our entire Gemara, and that is that she's 12 years of age, and she has physical characteristics. She has two pubic hairs. That is going to move her from being a Ketana to being a Gedola. Now, I understand, by the way, I'm simplifying right now because there's a stage of Nairus, but we don't have to know that right now. You have to know it in general, but not now. Anyway, so that's generally speaking what we call Simanim. Those are physical maturation signs that indicate that she's an adult. Here's what we're saying. That's not the only sign of maturation. There's now an additional sign of maturation. If she successfully gestates and delivers a baby, that's also a sign of maturation. That also will bring her to the point of being a gadol. Banim, hareheim, kesimanim. Just like the classic physical maturation signs of shteis aros will make her a gadol, so will her successfully having a baby, even if she's below 12 years of age. Okay. Now, what does that mean? It's a really it's an important rule that Gemara is just laying down for us. And that is that we assume that the quote-unquote bas mitzvah, meaning her graduation to becoming an adult, can only be done through simanim. Okay, so today's daf, I know yesterday's daf, has just taught us that no, that's only one way in which she can graduate. Another way in which she can graduate to becoming a gedola is going to be having a child. The East Amri Banim Adifa Misimanim. Now, the way some people suggest it, it's even better. Now, Lamai Nafgamina, now, what difference does it make? Meaning, either way, if she has a child, she graduated. It's the same, it's better. Well, what difference does that make? So, Da'afila Rabbi Yehuda Damar Achi Arba Ashchor, Bebanim Oda. So, the Gemara says it really addresses the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. A Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which we're going to be discussing. I'm going to say later in this Masechta. No, not later in this Masechta. It's back in Nida. So Rabbi Yehuda says that a woman can do Mian even after she immediately turns 12, meaning the Shita, which is the accepted Shita, is that she can only do Mian up until 12. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, even a little bit after. How much after? She has to have more than just Shtei Saros. She has to have only when she has majority of Saros, then and only then can she, is she eligible to do Mian even afterwards? Okay, and according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, When we say that banim is greater than simanim, we mean then that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if she has a child, that's it. She's an adult. He has a general extension for miyan. Yeah, but that's if we're gauging by sa'aros. If we're gauging by her having a child, so it's even better. Better over here just simply means it is a more definitive form of adulthood, and therefore, when she has a child, she's an adult. It could be either one of them. I mean, you only need one of the two. So right. So if she presents either one of them, she's an adult. So the Rav Zvid Amar Ein Banim Below Simanim. Now Rav Zvid says it a little bit differently, and that is that really the one true litmus test of adulthood is the Shtei Sa'aros. The way Rav Zvid says is that if she had a baby, it means she has Sa'aros. So the Gemara says, well, that's interesting. V'nivdok. So do an examination. So the Chayshin and Shema Nashro. The Gemara says, yeah, but there is trauma involved in delivering a child, and that trauma may result in the Sa'aros just simply falling out. So Hanich Lamandar Mechoshin, Lamandar Mechoshin, Michael Amemar. So the Gemara says, well, are we worried in general about Sa'aros falling out? So the Gemara says, it's a machlokas. And I know it's a little bit funny. Usually it's called the machlokas, the metzius. But right now we're going to call it a machlokas. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, even if you subscribe to the position that I'm not concerned about the sorrows falling out, but that's when I don't include childbirth. The delivery of a child is traumatic. Everyone understand over here, I'm not talking psychologically, although I may be. I'm just saying it's trauma. So it's a real event. And so as a result of that, even if I'm generally speaking, even if I'm skeptical about Sa'aros falling out, but when you introduce childbirth as part of the situation, so then even then you're going to entertain, yes, it's possible that the Sa'aros fell out. But anyway, but the point is still all going to be the same point. Meaning it's just a question of how to say it, but everyone's of the position that if in fact she had a baby, she's an adult. Even though she hasn't reached 12 years of age yet, she's an adult. Okay. We're on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph on today's daf. And objectively, what we're going to do is we're going to get to the Mishnah. Maybe we'll do the Mishnah as well. But that's going to be our goal for today. Ketzad Potros Saraseim. So how are they going to excuse the Tsaros? Meaning, we're going back to our Mishnah, and we're going to just simply say what we've said already at the beginning of the Masechta. This will be a wonderful review. How do I know that I'm reviewed? I'm a Kral Tzor. Hatar Ripsa Tsaros Arbe. The Pasuk Anachremos, which we're going to be reading about in two Shabbosim from now. So that introduces us to the idea that not only is Achos Ishto going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam, again, Eshesach is the mitzvah. Achos Ishto is going to be exempt. But not only that, but Litzvor, look at the Pasuk there, it says that even the co-wives as well, the co-wives are going to have the status of being an Erva. The co-wife of an Erva has the status of an Erva. That is a drasha. It's a drasha we already heard earlier in the Masechta. Rav Ashi Amar Svarahu, Svarahi, Sarah Maitama Sirda Bamakom Erva Kaimei, Sarah Nambi Bamakom Erva Kaimei. Now, the drasha, and I wasn't clear about this, but now please allow me to be clear. The drasha is not only for the exemption of Itzara, the drasha is also for the exemption of Itzara, of Itzara. Okay? We already illustrated this back in the beginning of the Masechta. What does that mean? The Tzara of Itzara. It means that the brother died leaving two wives. One of them was an Erva, the other one was a co-wife of an Erva. Okay? They're both going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam. Fine. So now there's no mitzvah of Yibam, there's no mitzvah of Chalitza from either one of them. Okay. Now, in the event that, let's say, the Tzara is picked up by another one of the brothers, meaning after after the death now, so the Tzara is picked up by one of the brothers, and he dies having left now two wives, the Tzara of the Erva, and the Tzara now of the Tzara of the Erva. So now what's going to happen is that basically that status will spread to now the next co-wife. Aye, but she's not the co-wife of an Erva. She's only the co-wife of the co-wife of the Erva. Okay, that's the halacha of Afilu Tzarasem, but Tzarasem are going to be Petura. Why should that be? So that we darshaned also from the word Litzror. The double resh, if I remember correctly, is what Rashi said back on Daf Gimel. So the So the Gemara Ravashi Amar Svara Hi Tzara Maitama Asiri Demamokam Erva Kaime Tzara Tzara Nami Bemokam Erva Kaime. Ravashi says, I don't need a drasha. Meaning, the argument stands on its own even without a drasha. And the argument is, what is the status of a Tzara's Erva? An Erva. Meaning that the status of Erva will extend to the co-wife of the Erva. So that makes a co-wife of an Erva? An Erva. Oh. So now when that woman is now coupled with another woman, so what's going to happen now is that since she has the status of an Erva, her co-wife also is going to obtain the status of an Erva. In other words, I'm not saying this biologically, but simply the status spreads. Okay. Kate said, Imeisa v'heim v'chule. V'afilu kanof v'sof gireish. Now, what did we learn together in our Mishnah? We learned in our Mishnah that if they shared a husband, they meaning the Tzara and the Erva and the Tzara, if they shared a husband, and at the time in which he died, so they were co-wives, so under those circumstances that you will have an exemption of not only Erva but Tzara's Erva as well. Now, what we also learned in our Mishnah is that if he divorces her meaning the Erva, prior to his death, and then he dies, so what did we learn together in the Mishnah? Under those circumstances, so then you're Miyabim, because the Erva no longer is part of the equation. Okay, that's what our Mishnah taught us. Uriminhu. Now, we're having a Mishnah coming up later in the Masechta and Daf Lamed. The Mishnah. Gimel Achim, you have three brothers, Shaimem, Nesu, Beis Achaz, Vachad, Nasu, Nachris, so please follow. And we'll do this case later in the Masechta as well, but follow along. So you have three brothers, two of them marrying two sisters, and one of them marrying not a sister, a non-sister. Stam, another woman. Girish echem mibale achayos es ishto. So one of the brothers who was married to a sister divorced his wife. Umeisa nasui nachris. And then what happens is that the brother, the third brother, who was married to Stam, a woman, so he dies. Vikansa hamigaresh, and the Megaresh married her, Omeis, and then he dies. So if you're following now well, what we just described, we're looking now at the second brother. He was married to an Erva, but he divorced her. He then took on another wife, but he was never married to the two of them simultaneously. Zuhi, let's follow the Mishnah carefully. Listen carefully to the words. Zui shamru she'imeso nisgar she'tzarasei mutaras. So this is going to be a scenario in which the co-wives are going to be mutaros because they never shared they were never co-wives. They never shared the same husband. Now, if you look carefully at that case over there, and again, I know I'm going through this quickly, but if you look carefully at that case over there, there was never a shared living experience between the co-wives. In other words, he was married to the two of them, but not at the same time. Now, the Mishnah said, this is the case where there's not going to be an exemption of Tzara's Erva. What does it sound like? It sounds like if there was a shared experience between the two of them, meaning that the two of them share the husband together, even if ultimately he divorces the Erva prior to his death, it sounds like that would be a case of Tzara's Erva. Now, if that's right, that goes against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah told us that even if they had shared living experience with their husband, and he divorces them, that still it will be discounted because at the time of his death, he wasn't married to the two of them. So time of digir shvacharkach kanasavakanasavacharkach gireish lo. So the Mishnah Daf Lamed seems to be going against the Mishnah Daf Beis. I'm Rav Yirmiyah Tavra Misha Shanazu Lo Shanazu. So Rav Yirmiyah says you're right. They don't agree. So hi Tanasavra Misa Mapelas Vai Tanasavra Nisuna Rishona Mapilin. Now in terms of lumdus. So this is a lot to think about. I'm going to say this, unfortunately, too quickly, but there is a lot to think about in terms of lumdus over here. Here's how the lumdus operates. Our Mishnah is looking at Yibum and what becomes a significant moment? The death of the brother. The death of the brother becomes a significant moment. Historically, he was married to an Erva and a co-wife as well. That's lovely. Yibum only picks it up from his death. If at his death, he's only married to the co-wife, and he was not married to the Erva, i.e. he divorced the Erva or she died, whatever the case is. If at the time of his death, there was no Tzara was not a Tzara's Erva. Then there's a mitzvah of Yibam. That's our Mishnah. And the Gemara, and the terminology used in the Gemara is Misa Mapelas. On the other hand, the Mishnah Daf Lamed says, no, you're looking at Yibam all wrong. Yibam doesn't pick it up from death. Yibam picks it up from the time that the brother originally got married. Meaning that when you are a Yavam, you are just simply a Hemshech. You're a continuation of your brother's relationships. Now, if historically he was married to two women simultaneously, one was the Erva and the other one is the Tsar's Erva, so we view the co-wife of an Erva as a co-wife of an Erva, even though at the time when he died, she was no longer in the picture. Doesn't matter, because where you're picking it up from is from the time of the Nisuin, of the original Nisuin. Now, again, I said it quickly, and the truth of the matter is, I spent some time thinking about it. It's difficult. This Svara over here is a difficult Svara, that we're looking at the total history, but the Gemara is saying that that's the way the Mishnah Daf Lamed looks at it. That is one approach of how to deal with the two Mishnayos, and that the two Mishnayos are having an extraordinarily fundamental debate in terms of at what point in time the Yavam is picking it up from. The point of death, or even historically earlier. Hold it. It's a fair question. Just one second. Rava Amar Lolam Chatana Hu Vizu Evein Sarach Lomar Zu Katani. Rava says you're making too much of these two Mishnayos. The two Mishnayos are just giving us examples. The two Mishnayos are not arguing with one another. Our Mishnah, of course, is giving us the bigger Chiddush. You're right. You take the Mishnah Daf Lamed, you start there, you go to our Mishnah. Each one of them is an acceptable illustration of what it would mean like to have a non-exemption. I'm sorry, that's confusing, but it's correct. A non-exemption of Yibum, meaning that if at the time of death they are not co-wives, so then they're going to be exempt. So, then they will not be exempt. The exemption is only created when they were co-wives at the time of death. The Mishnah Daf Lamed does not give that scenario. You're right. Zu ve'in tzarech lomar zu. Once you know our Mishnah, the Mishnah Daf Lamed almost becomes unnecessary.
He also uses the same point of demarcation for unborn brother. That's just the same concept lies at the time of death. It doesn't,
Okay. Okay. Again, there's a lot to consider over here. I'm just outlining the basic points of the Gemara over here. Rava says that the two Mishnayos are not arguing with one another. Okay. V'chol she'echol l'ma'ein. Okay, last point of our Mishnah. Last point till we make it to the next Mishnah. And that's kol she'echol l'ma'ein. If mion could have been done. Okay, what happened? Our Mishnah is describing now the man died with two wives, but one of them was a katana, which means that she could have done mion, but she didn't do mion. And it happens to be the katana was the erva. Okay, she had the opportunity to do mion, she didn't. And now these two women present themselves to the Yavam for the mitzvah of Yibam. So kol she'yichol l'lamayin, with the potential, with the ability to do mion. So what's the conclusion? The Mishnah says, what now the Yavam has to do is chalitza, but that's all he can do. He can't do Yibam. So the Gemara says, why not? Vatim ma'ein. I got a great idea. The girl, the katana who had the ability to do mion, so let her exercise her mion. That right of refusal continues even after the death of her husband. In other words, let her do mion. We discussed this in yesterday's daf, and as promised, we're going to discuss it again right now. So hashta, I'm sorry, v'timayin hashta, v'tisyabem. So let the erva do mion, because again, she had a right of refusal. Let her exercise it. And now, as far as the other wife is concerned, no longer a co-wife. Because again, what does mion do? It annuls a marriage. And so now the erva has been taken out of the picture. She's no longer part of the equation. And now the other wife now no longer is a co-wife. And now she's no longer the co-wife of an erva. And that works even retroactively. And now she could do the mitzvah of Yibum. And why isn't that a simple solution? Okay. So the Gemara is going to have two answers to this question. Now, the first answer of the Gemara is going to confuse us because it runs counter to what we learned yesterday. Okay, I don't have to encourage you, but forget what you learned yesterday. Okay. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to remember what we learned yesterday. But forget what you learned yesterday.
How can you remind somebody that's already dead?
So the answer has to be, right? I also thought a lot about this. Yeah. The answer has to be is that Yavam is a Hemshech. So even though he's dead, but the Zika perpetuates.
So
Correct. Right. Lema misayil al Rabbi Yoshia damar Rabbi Yoshia maminis lamamar ovena maminis lezikaso. So the Gemara says, good, this will be a support and aid to the Shita of Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia says that when a Yavama is in a Miyun opportunity, that Miyun opportunity is extraordinarily limited. It can only accomplish so much. You know what it can do? It can untangle a Mimer, but that's it. It can't untangle a Zika. Okay. Which means to say that if Mimer was done to her, so then her right of refusal can only undo the Mimer. Now, undo the Mimer, what does that accomplish? So Rashi points out over here, it means that she's not going to require a get. Now, the truth of the matter is that later in the Masechta, in the fifth parak, we'll discuss this in much greater detail. So if you understood it now, great. And if not, please come back, where we're going to treat this much better later in the Masechta. But according to Rav Yoshia, what Mion cannot do is it can't undo a Zika. So once she is in that position of Yavam Yavama, and even though she had a right of refusal, that right of refusal will not take away. It will not take away her Zika. That's Rav Yoshia's position. Now again, remember what I said? It runs counter to what we learned yesterday. Okay, fine. Because Rav Yoshia doesn't agree with what we learned yesterday. And the Gemara immediately rejects it. The tone you get from the Gemara is the Gemara itself is unhappy with the Shita of Rav Yoshia. Tzaras Erev Hashani. So the Gemara says, no, Tzaras Erev is going to be different. Meaning that what the Gemara now is saying, which is what we said yesterday, is that when the Ketana has a Miyun ability and she exercises it, Me'ikar Hadin, it undoes. It undoes everything. It undoes a marriage, which by definition is going to undo the Zika. So what then becomes a concern or consideration over here? The concern is it's a perception issue. It's a gzeira de rabbanan. This is what we learned yesterday, and we get to review today. Didni, Rami bar Yecheskel miyana bebaal mutar saviv miyana beyavam asur la'aviv. If she does miyun to her husband, meaning a simple and classic case of miyun, where she was memayin her husband, she had a right of refusal. Again, she got married as a katana by either her brother or by her mother, and she had a right of refusal, and she exercised that right. So now it expunges the marriage. She can, I don't know if I'm going to recommend it, but she can marry her ex-husband's father. Of course. But, good. Danny, your understanding is? Right? Correct. Okay, perfect. Perfect. Right? That's exactly what Mian does. Mian expunges. However, if, let's say, with her marriage, she now falls to her Yavam, i.e. her husband died, and now she has a Yavam. So even though Me'ikar Hadin, that right of refusal, will accomplish the same goal, but people from the outside looking in will see, wait one second. Look at that marriage. Look what just happened to that marriage. She got swung over to her Yavam for the mitzvah of Yibum. Oh, that's a marriage. Ah, she did Mian? I know about this Mian thing, but you see what it did? It caused her to go to the Yavam for the mitzvah of Yibum. So from a perception standpoint, even if she done Mian, so it still looks like a marriage. And the Chachamim were sensitive to that. And so therefore the Chachamim said, since it looked like a marriage, so even if she did Mian, we're going to treat it like a marriage. Ama, Mishas Nefila, Niris Kekalaso. Hachaname, Mishas Nefila, Niris Ketzaras Bito. So the Gemara says, okay. So the Chachamim were sensitive to that. And therefore the Chachamim legislated in such a circumstance. If she's over and she does marry him, it would be chal. I'll tell you what. There's already enough to think about. So let's leave it with that which we thought about. Okay, I'd like to do the Mishnah. In fact, we are going to do the Mishnah, and tomorrow we'll start with the Gemara. The Mishnah now is going to give us six new cases. Okay, so there's already enough to think about for today, and I understand Yavamas is a more challenging Masechta. Okay, we noted that in the beginning of the Masechta, but now I'm going to give you a lot more to think about because there are six other arayos that are going to make it into the next Mishnah, this Mishnah. Okay, what is fundamentally different about these arayos over the first arayos is not the nature, not the level of the prohibition. The arayos mentioned on Daf Beis, they're all in Issur Kares. The arayos mentioned over here also are in Issur Kares. So why are we separating and categorizing in two separate categories? It's really simple. And here, I'm not oversimplifying, it really is simple. In these cases over here, there's never even going to be discussion of Yibum because none of your brothers are able to marry this woman. this woman's an erva to you, and it's the same relationship that exists between you and all your brothers. As opposed to the first 15, erva to you, but it's possible for your brother to marry. Again, go back to the first example, your daughter. Your brother can marry your daughter. I know it's strange, but that's the Torah allows for that. Your brother can marry your daughter. Masha Einkein over here, none of your brothers are able to marry any of the arais that we're going to be describing over here. Six that we're going to be describing in total. Shesha arais chamors me'elu mimneshin esum la'cherim v'itzarasem mutaros. Look, because who are they going to be married to? They're not going to be married to any of your brothers. They're going to be married to outsiders. Oh, okay, fine. So in other words, there's never going to be a yibum scenario. There will never be a yibum context. And therefore, the co-wives of these women are always going to be permitted to you because it was never in the case of yibum. Saras erva is only usher b'makom yibum. And over here, there's no makom yibum. Who are these six? So they're going to be your mother, imo v'eshes aviv, your wife's father. Now remember, we discussed this earlier in the Masechta. What's the difference? Meaning, first of all, your wife's father doesn't have to be your mother. I understand that point. But who's imo over here? So remember, we discussed already, that's anusas aviv. Because if we're talking about just Tom, it's your mother, who is the wife of your father, well, that's included in Eshes Aviv. So Imo has to be over here, Anusas Aviv. Your father violated a woman, and it's going like the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda. Okay, good. If you remember it, great. And if not, so then I encourage you to please review. Okay, Achos Aviv, your wife's sister, your father's sister. Achoso Me Aviv, your sister through a father. Eshes Achi Aviv, the wife of your father's brother. Now, I'll say your aunt, but that's not enough of a description. Meaning it is it's your father's brother's wife. Again, she is an erva to you. She will be an erva to all your brothers as well. Now, remember, when we say brother over here, by yibum, it means brothers that are all shared by the same father. Right? This is fundamental to yibum. Yibum is only a possibility for paternal brothers, not for maternal brothers. Again, we said that on day one, it bears repeating. Eshes achiv me aviv, and the wife of a brother, a paternal brother. In other words, such a woman, again, in a yibum context, obviously there's a mitzvah of yibum. But outside of that, meaning if she divorces if your brother divorces her, so under those circumstances, none of the brothers are allowed to marry her. Okay. Now, those are the next six. Good. Beit Shammai, Matir Natsaros La'achim, Abesel Osrin. Beit Shammai says that the co-wives are going to be mutter. The co-wives are never going to be mutter. What? Beit Shammai says what? Beit Shammai says everything that we learned for the last 2 weeks of the daf. So Beit Shammai says, no, we disagree. Now we heard this already earlier in the Masech, that it's not the first time we're hearing this, but Beit Shammai takes a fundamentally different viewpoint regarding the co-wife of an erva. Beit Shammai is of the position that there's no such concept of Tzaras Erva. And so therefore, you're allowed to marry her. Now, if you think about it, and I'm not giving everyone enough time to think about it, apologies, but if you think about it, so that is going to create an unbelievable disparity between the school of Beit Shammai and the school of Beit Sillah. We're going to note that in just a moment. So the Beit Sillah Ostrim. Chiltzu, let's say you do Chalitza to the co-wife. So Beit Shammai posel menakuna Beit Sillah machshirin. So as far as Beit Shammai is concerned, so the chalitza registers as a chalitza. The co-wife according to Beit Shammai is eligible for either yibum or chalitza. Meaning that if and when you do chalitza to the co-wife of an erva, you know what that's called? It's called chalitza. And a chalitza is asur to a kohen. According to Beit Sillah, when you do chalitza to the co-wife of an erva, do you know what that is? It's a funny ceremony performed between two people who don't need it. It's simply disregarded because it doesn't mean anything. It's not necessary. Now, let's say Yibam is performed between the Yavam and Saras Erva. In other words, he's with her. He has relations with her. So according to Beit Shammai, you did a mitzvah. Congratulations. And according to Beit Sillah, you violate an Avera. In other words, that she is an Erva to you. So what happens when a man has relations with an Erva? A lot of things happen. If they have children, the children are mamzerim. Even before that, she is involved in an act of znus. It's an illicit relations that she just had. So now she is a zona. no longer able to marry a kohen. We're going to be speaking about this much greater detail later in the Masechta. Okay, obviously, again, here the Mishnah illustrates the wide gap now that exists between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Wait, there's more. Beis Shammai Machshirin Beis Hillel Maposim. Afa Pishelo Osrim Ve'elo Matirim Ve'elo Posim Ve'elo Machshirin. So now the Mishnah itself notes that there is such a wide gap between the two of them. Lo Nimnu Beis Shammai Melisa Nashim Beis Hillel Ve'lo Beis Hillel Mi Beis Shammai. And so the Mishnah ends off on a beautiful point, which is that they intermarried, okay, only to be used in this context. So they intermarried. So those who were students of Beis Shammai married him within those who were students of Beis Hillel, and vice versa. Now it's a beautiful point, right? Okay, so I'm starting to do this. Okay, it is a beautiful point in terms of understanding differences and maintaining unity. It is a beautiful point. However. In other words, you're allowed to marry a mamzer? Meaning, I understand unity, but if according to Beis Shammai, or let's do it from Beis Hillel's perspective, according to Beis Hillel, the product of that union is a mamzer, so unity allows you to marry a mamzer? So of course the answer is no. Okay. So it's a little bit of cold water on a beautiful point. Okay, but no. And so as Rashi points out over here, Rashi says, you know how unity is created? By communication. Meaning you tell them. In other words, if this was a Yibam situation where Beis Shammai allowed it, and according to Beis Hillel produced a mamzer, so in other words, there was communication between the two parties. Look, you're a student of Beis Hillel, so just beware. More than beware. Meaning, this girl's not for you.
But I think the status of mamzer is going to go for generations ad nauseum, so how they get keep track?
Eventually, you're going to forget about
that. That's like, I can see one generation like letting each other know, but like going for thousands.
I acknowledge your question, understand your question, don't have a great answer. Okay.
It's not practical, right?
Yes. All I'm saying is yes. Okay. So kol ataros v'atamer shayu elam atarim ve'elam atamim lo nimnu osun taros elu al gabi elu. And the same thing as far as tuma tahara is concerned. Meaning go back to the Gemara in Shabbos and daf yudalin. Okay, good. It's a good way to remember. We're not in yudalin, but same general area. Go back to Shabbos, daf yudalin, and you know the differences that exist between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel and so many areas of tuma tahara. Good. So now that you know those differences, so were they lending kalim one to another? The Mishnah says, sure. Even though they disagreed regarding statuses of tuma tahara, but again, and I'm going to say it like Rashi, but with communication, so they allowed for lending and borrowing from one to another. And also, when it comes to kalim, you can always tovel them, unless it's kli cheres where there you can't. Anyway, let's end off on a nice point. Okay, and we'll stop over here, and tomorrow we'll pick it up with the Gemara, and we did really well today. Okay, so but let's quickly recap. Our first topic of discussion today was the tzara of, and I'm going to say it correctly now. I'm so excited. We discussed the tzara of an islandess, of a mamenis, and a machzer grushas mishanises, and the kawais of all these women. So it has been the discussion of the Gemara back on Dapim Yud Aleph and Yud Beis, and the Gemara's conclusion on the top of Yud Beis and Yud Beis. Where it's more or less where we started this morning. And the conclusion is that tzaras of all these women are in fact mutaros. Now that's a confusing conclusion because it pretty much runs counter to the discussion that was had up until that point in time. Okay, so the Gemara's conclusion does an about face. And well beyond the scope of the daf, so you have to understand where the Gemara started, how the Gemara ended. The Gemara doesn't explain why it turned on so many of these issues. Okay, that's one. Two. Is it, which is Yud Beis Amud Beis. Is it possible for a minor to have a baby? So, possible. Yes, it's possible. It runs counter to our Mishnah. So, the Gemara spent most of Yud Beis Amud Beis discussing that very issue, arriving at really interesting conclusions, which is basically, if a woman had a child prior to being 12 years of age, that's a simon. Sa'aros is a simon, and giving birth is a simon as well. Now, that's an oversimplification. There are a couple of ways in terms of how the Gemara ended off saying it, but that is our second big point of today. Our third big point of today, not only are the tzara of an erva going to be pater, but the tzara of a tzara is going to be pater. How do I know that? Either drasha or svara. Next point of today's daf. Co-wives of an erva. When is a significant point to look at when they're co-wives? Is it going to be at the death of the husband, or is it going to be even at an earlier point in time? Sounds like we have differing positions based on whether you follow the Mishnah Daf Beis or the Mishnah Daf Lamed. So either two possibilities of the Gemara. The Mishnahs don't agree with one another. The other possibility, they do agree with one another, but each one is just giving an example, and our Mishnah is giving the more extreme example. Next topic of discussion, a woman could have done Miyun, she didn't. Now what happens? Her co-wife is going to have to do Chalitza, but not Yibum. Why not allow her, if she had the right of refusal, why not allow her to do Miyun? The Gemara's question, two answers to that question. Either Rav Oshia, Miyun cannot undo from the perspective of Zika, that's Rav Oshia's viewpoint, or the other viewpoint of the Gemara is that no, fundamentally it can, it's just Gzera Derabanan because of the perception that's created. Finally, the last topic that we did is the Mishnah, on the very bottom of Yugim Amad Aleph, six Arayos, where there's never going to be a discussion of Tsaras Erva. Why? Because your brothers are never able to marry this woman based on just the simple nature of the relationship. She's going to be an erva to you and to all your paternal brothers as well. There are six different examples that we went through in the Mishnah. And the last thing that we covered this morning is Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says that Tsaras Erva is in fact Muteris. Tsaras Erva is going to be Muteris. How could that possibly be? And we're going to see tomorrow, actually. In other words, we don't know why. Tomorrow's discussion, the beginning of our topic, our discussion tomorrow. But anyway, that makes for a wide discrepancy between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Noted. The Mishnah notes it.